This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Welcome to season 3 of the To Health With That podcast, where we break up big topics into small bites. I'm your host, Dr. Amy Neuzel, and I'm joined by my dear friend, women's health and fertility expert, naturopathic physician Kate Namas, to break down infertility, hormones, and the whole baby-making shebang. This week, let's talk about the multiple and varied ways that MTHFR polymorphisms can affect fertility for both male and female partners.
Oh, I'm excited for this episode. Does MTHFR affect male factor infertility?
Yes, it very strongly does. So it's well known to affect men's fertility, including sperm count and sperm morphology, which is basically the proper shape of sperm, right? Whether they're put together correctly. So research published in the Journal of Assisted Reproduction and Genetics suggests that DNA structure of the sperm becomes altered due to defective methylation, which may explain the common link with hypofertility. The same study also suggests 5L-MTHF as the appropriate treatment, which is kind of wonderful, actually, because most of the studies on women's infertility associated with MTHFR are still beating the folic acid dead horse.
So what is the normal treatment for this?
Yeah, just like with women, with men's hypofertility, high-dose folic acid is a standard medical treatment for improving sperm parameters in men struggling with subfertility or infertility. But like with women, this may not be the best course of action for men with MTHFR. One study also shows that for men with MTHFR C677T polymorphisms, high-dose folic acid actually decreases DNA methylation in sperm, which is the opposite direction from what we want to go. So it's the opposite of what we're looking for in terms of improving fertility. And this may be similar to the folic acid-induced pseudo-MTHFR in bunny ear quotes that we've talked about in past episodes. But essentially, it boils down to folic acid actually making things worse for people with MTHFR rather than better.
Yikes. There is some evidence that many women with MTHFR struggle with repeat pregnancy loss. What do we know about this?
This is a really interesting situation where many women with MTHFR experience what is known as idiopathic, right? Again, bunny ears, idiopathic, meaning we don't know the cause, repeat pregnancy loss. But researchers are having a really hard time nailing down what's actually happening. So one study of genetic variances showed a weak but not significant enough to be considered conclusive association between MTHFR and idiopathic recurrent pregnancy loss. And other research specifically studies idiopathic repeat pregnancy loss in women with MTHFR to see if an associated factor like lowering homocysteine or boosting B vitamins changes things for the better. The bottom line here is that we know repeat pregnancy loss happens in women with MTHFR, but it looks like it's a lot more complicated than just having the gene SNP or not. And it's very possible that it comes down to having MTHFR plus some related factor like microclotting, high homocysteine, or something unknown.
Very interesting. I'm thinking of a particular client right now. Clotting can be a risk factor for people with MTHFR mutations, and it represents a common risk factor for pregnancy loss. What does the research say about this?
Yes, this to me is so hopeful. So there's a few really lovely studies showing that repeat pregnancy loss for women with MTHFR mutations might actually be linked to microclotting, and that would be microclotting in the placenta, right? And so one study published in the Journal of International Medical Research compared pregnancy outcomes in women with MTHFR C677T polymorphisms, and they could be heterozygous or homozygous, so two bad copies or one, with different clotting protocols. So group one took 81 milligrams of baby aspirin plus, unfortunately, 5 milligrams of folic acid. And for reasons we've discussed before, I would personally choose methylfolate over folic acid, but folic acid is still the standard of care. And so that was what was used in this research. And then group two had those same things, baby aspirin, folic acid, plus Lovenox, which is an anticoagulant. And then group three was a comparison group, basically just normal women without MTHFR polymorphisms who were receiving care in the same study. You know, it really made a huge difference in terms of outcomes. So group one, that was the aspirin and the folic acid, 51% had first trimester miscarriages, which is a pretty high rate. Group two, the aspirin, folic acid, and Lovenox, only 20.3 had first trimester miscarriages. That's a huge difference, right? Like we're talking about a 30% difference here. And then in the control group, only 12.8. So that group that had the aspirin, which is a blood thinner or like an antiplatelet, and the folic acid and the Lovenox really got well within sort of range of a normal miscarriage rate. And the delivery rates went up as well. So that's, you know, they didn't miscarry in the first trimester, but when you look at the delivery rates, group one, which was the aspirin and folic acid, had a 46% delivery rate, right? So less than half of those women made it to a successful delivery. Group two, which had the aspirin, folic acid, and the Lovenox, the additional blood thinner, had a 79.7% delivery rate. That's amazing. 79.7% is actually really, really good for people in a situation where there's known pregnancy loss. And then the control group, which was the quote unquote wild type or normal women, had an 86.3% delivery rate. So really some significant changes there with anticoagulants, and especially with the stronger combination of both the baby aspirin and the Lovenox. So it really strongly suggests that microclotting is actually a big contributor to the pregnancy loss. And of course, we're going to have to do more research around this, but it's very hopeful, right? Because this is something that it's not that difficult to prescribe. And a lot of doctors will actually be willing to do it. So great.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Yes, I'd love to see some other variations of this study, but this is really fascinating. I know high blood levels of homocysteine can be associated with MTHFR variances. Is that also an issue in pregnancy?
It is, actually. So high homocysteine is well-documented risk with MTHFR. And we've talked about homocysteine extensively in season one and two of the podcast in non-pregnant situations. But in pregnancy, homocysteine brings different complications. Homocysteine levels do actually decrease during a normal pregnancy, reaching their lowest point in the second trimester, and then they slowly increase again as the pregnancy continues. They do not return to pre-pregnancy levels until after delivery. Normal levels of homocysteine during a pregnancy are 3.9 to 7.3 millimoles per liter before 16 weeks of gestation. And I mean, compare this to like 5 to 15, right? So it's a significant drop. And then slightly higher between 20 and 24 weeks, then 3.3 to 7.5 millimoles per liter after 36 weeks. Having high homocysteine levels increases free radicals, which can injure the cells lining blood vessels in both the mother and the placenta. It can also decrease the blood vessels and circulation overall in the placenta and ultimately lead to complications for both mother and baby. And so high homocysteine also promotes clotting, which we just talked about, which can lead to problems in placental circulation within the pregnancy and in delivery, but also can lead to spontaneous abortion. According to recent studies, high homocysteine was associated with numerous pregnancy complications, including recurrent pregnancy loss. So that's an independent risk factor there. Preeclampsia, preterm delivery, placental abruption, fetal growth restriction, and gestational diabetes. These are, of course, risks that are also associated with MTHFR, probably because of the overlap in those situations.
Wow. Well, fascinating. Thank you so much, Amy.
Yeah, I mean, MTHFR, we've got some issues with pregnancy, but it's also, I think, manageable, and there's some really hopeful information. So as long as we can go into a pregnancy with a regulated homocysteine and then really pay attention to the clotting during the pregnancy and the nutritional status before the pregnancy, I think we've got a good shot at it. So
yeah, absolutely. Are you testing homocysteine then in pregnancy in these particular situations?
I don't typically, I mean, normally in pregnancy, I hand off care to somebody else.
Right.
And so during the pregnancy, I don't, but I do like to test homocysteine if a couple is in the preconception window and I'm helping them to prepare.
Yeah. I kind of want to, just for the fun of it, start testing their homocysteine during pregnancy just to see what it looks like, because I've never looked
at it. What's going on? Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
It's surprising how much it changes, right? Because that pre-pregnancy level is very, very different from the pregnancy level. So, or is supposed to be.
Wow.
All right. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening today and sharing your time with us. If you like this show, please follow and maybe even leave a review, or like and subscribe if you happen to be watching on YouTube. Visit NaumesND.com or tohealthwiththat.com for more information about Drs. Kate and me, Dr. Amy.